Hi, this is Jean Bruce Scott.
And Randy Reinholz.
And when we're not busily producing some of the most outstanding Native American theater in Los Angeles,
we always like to check out the best of British audio adventures with Alex Lefchuk and his team of the Midweek Drive.
And Midweek Drive morning editions on Siren FM.
And Southside Broadcasting. .podbean.com.
The Jet Reds, and of course from the Jet Reds, we're delighted to welcome now. Finally, we managed to sort him through. It's the wonderful Craig Redpath. How are you, Craig?
I'm very well, mate, thanks. And thanks for getting one second time of asking, man.
Hey, listen, you know, keep music live, keep supporting the whole thing. That's what we do. It's all very important from that point of view. And once again, you heard the views of Katie Grimason and Rebecca Bond. They loved it. What's not to love about the whole sort of sequence? One of four singles. I mean, you're going to be hyper prodigious. Is this a kind of pandemic bonus?
It is a bit, mate. I think we're a little bit fortunate in with our timing of how we've done things last year. Obviously, we're all sort of going in and out of these lockdown and tier systems all throughout last year. So I think it was about the September time. And God, I can't remember what was going on then now in terms of where we're at with the virus and what have you.
But I think we'd come out of lockdown one. We'd had eat out to help out. Some of the schools were going back. We were talking about blended learning, and lockdown two and three were pretty much on the horizon. They were just things we were just waiting to kind of develop, really. Who would have thought it, eh?
That's it, mate. So I think we're fortunate enough at that point to get some time to go down and record. So we were down in Manchester for a couple of weekends, basically, and we thought with the way things are, that the gigging scene obviously kind of looked off the cards then and we obviously weren't sure coming into this year what the situation was going to be, so we decided to get down, and we've been sitting on this last bunch of tracks for a while, and we haven't been in the studio for too long, really, but we're writing quite sort of ferociously anyway. So I thought, look, we'll get down and get a good few tracks done. So at least if we are sort of stuck a little bit next year to get out and play, at least we can keep active with what we're releasing. So we've done the four tracks, and that should sort of tide us over and give us new content to share with people, at least, you know, even if we're going to be waiting a little longer to get back on stage.
Yeah, 2021, the year of the Jet Reds. Now, again, confirming that it wasn't just a one-off, that she thoroughly enjoyed Pamela, that basically it's her kind of music. We're absolutely delighted to welcome to the rescheduled connection with yourself, Craig, the awesome Rebecca Bond. How are you, Rebecca?
Hi, I'm very well, thank you. Lovely to see you both.
Marvellous. Well, Rebecca, any questions you'd like to put to the man? He's connected. He's with us. What would you like to ask him?
Yeah, I'd love to. I mean, sorry I tuned in a bit late here. I don't want to ask the same question
twice. You weren't
twice,
as late as me, Rebecca. I was about a week late.
Don't worry at all. That's no problem. I just was wondering, I think you might have just been talking about this now, but how has the pandemic and not being able to, you know, go out there and perform your music to a live audience felt? Because obviously that really does bring a lot of energy to, you know, what you do as a living. So has that been different for you to not be, you know, performing to live audiences and travelling and touring as you usually would?
I think between the four of us, we've all sort of had different experience in terms of playing live music throughout the last sort of 10 years or so. I mean, for me personally, since I started playing, which is about 12 years ago now, this is certainly the driest spell for me being on stage. But is a band the same? Like, what a very active live band up until this happened. I think we're upwards of sort of 40-odd gigs the year before. All original, which, you know, I don't know how many guys you get on and stuff are heavily in the original music scene, but certainly for Montpierre, it's a little bit tougher than the likes of the cover bands and your sort of open mic players who gig probably more regularly than we do. So up until this, we're playing a lot of gigs, we felt, for the sort of scene we're into. So to go from that and absolutely none was weird. But yeah, rubbish, yeah, I suppose, because that's where it's at for us, you know what I mean? It's playing live, as I'm sure it is for most bands. So yeah, it wasn't great, but I think we're in a strange way fortunate enough that this isn't our full-time jobs yet. So it hasn't had the sort of impact that maybe it has had on others who do at this stage make a living out what they do. You know what I mean? I'm a lot harder for them, I'm sure, than it has been for us.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's probably been a struggle to even, like, go see your favourite performers even. I mean, I'm really looking forward to getting back as soon as possible, you know, see, you know, just to have that live experience again. I think young people especially are really, really missing out on that. I was wondering as well, how did you get together as a band? Because I think for a lot of people, did you start as friends, or was that, you know, you found each other through your love of music? How did that come about?
There's been sort of two versions of the Jet Reds.
Right.
I started about 5 years ago, I think now. When I just came out of the band I was in before that, I've been in a long time, left that, started my own and got the band going, yeah, about 5 years ago. And there's me and the guitarist Dan, who's still with me now, kind of started it. That wasn't together very long, just the lads were at the time, had a lot of commitments and stuff and went and done their own thing. So it's about a year out between me and Dan, and then the lineup that we've got now, the four of us. I think this is in the third or fourth year now.
I've got to say, Craig, just very briefly there, for some bizarre reason, it sounds as though you've gone into full reverb mode. Initially, I thought, what's going on here? I mean, I don't know, Rebecca, if you're sort of listening in down in Norwich, does Craig sound as though he's a little bit coming from like two speakers?
Yeah, it sounds like there's three of you, Craig. It's very echoey for some reason.
Anyway, yeah. If I stick a pair of headphones on, it might be a bit better.
We'll just have to wait and see. I don't know, it just sort of seemed to go there. I mean, everything else seemed to be working well, and then suddenly he kind of became triplicate man. It's fantastic.
But right now, it's still sounding a bit ropey on my sound, right?
We're still not
the same.
As crisp stuff as we had at the start, Craig. Most peculiar. Never mind. let's not despair. We continue. Are we sounding okay to you? Are we coming across okay?
You sound fine, yeah, mate. Give it a second. I'm going to pop some headphones in here and let us know if this sounds any better. Is that all right?
This is a whole wonderful world of a musician at work, Rebecca. It's fantastic. You put a plug in the right thing. It's awesome. I could almost write.
Right, what's that sound like? I'm any better than
now? Now, there, Craig. Uh-huh. You see, obviously, doing that sound check. 1, 2, 1, 2. Can you hear me, mother? Etc.
Pays dividends, mate. It pays dividends.
Absolutely. You know, a live sound check. What one for the fans, there, Craig.
This is the closest I felt we're gigging a year. It's great.
There you go, Rebecca. Back to you.
I was just going to add, you know, it's fantastic you found each other because you are producing some brilliant music at the moment. Does that stem from your, you know, do you all have a love of the particular music you produce? Because I've said before, I'm quite biased because the type of music you produce is my favourite, I must admit. But does that stem from your enjoyment of listening to it? Do you produce what you enjoy listening to?
I think the bass player, Marty, and myself have a very similar taste. Our first love music was Oasis for both of us.
Yeah, definitely.
That's how we became sort of friends. And we're working together at the time. And when we got talking, it was music that came up. And all of that sort of scene and that genre of music's where it all started for us, I suppose. But
yeah,
as well as that, I mean, Marty used to do like drum and bass night and MC. When he was sort of getting into music, obviously totally Brilliant. Different vibe. And then
yeah, really cool.
Dan, the guitarist, is he likes sort of deep house music and sort of reggae, like Tash Sultana's stuff and that. Dean the drummer's in, like, so the Foo Fighters and that. So I think between all of us, there's quite an eclectic taste. But
yeah,
I think we're with these tracks now, I think we've hit a sort of sweet spot as to where we want to be musically. Mm. All the music before this that we've released, the first album, sounds completely different. It's a lot more heavily produced. There's a lot more diversity in terms of the sort of genres that come through on it. And that was, I suppose, me just venturing into songwriting for the first time. I didn't write the music in my first band, whereas up until quite recently, I wrote all of the music with this one. Whereas now, as we've got together and Marty's also involved in the songwriting and stuff, we seem to have, like I say, just found this sweet spot in a sound which we're all very excited by. So, yeah, it's good.
Yeah,
it's
you
good.
Definitely work fantastically together. Do you plan to tour again when you're allowed to? Is that something that's on the agenda for when you're allowed to get back out there?
I hope so. I mean, we've played a lot up where we're from in the northeast. We've done a lot of local stuff, and we've dotted about London a couple of times in Manchester. We've got sort of connections with Manchester in terms of how we've came to record with music and the people we've met down there and who are involved with the band to a degree still now. So we want to get out and about as much as we can. It's a difficult one to plan at the minute, obviously, but with the news last week, fingers crossed, it's a bit easier to start getting things booked in. So yeah, definitely, if we can get some stuff in the summer, that'd be great.
Good, look forward to it. I say it'd be brilliant to see you out and about again. It'd be brilliant.
Yeah, same here, man. Hopefully soon.
And in terms of Pamela, just share with us any kind of reason for Pamela. I mean, there are so many names you could have conceivably chosen. I mean, you could have had, you could have gone Brittany, you could have gone Rebecca, you could have gone Megan, you could have gone
These
Kate.
Have all been done, Alex. We looked, man. They've all been done. These haven't been done yet. Fine. No, this is a hard one to explain without sounding a bit mad. So this song, what happened was in a lot of the recent stuff that we're coming up with has happened in a similar sort of vein. It was quite literally the four of us getting together in the rehearsal studio and just setting up. And what you hear on record is kind of how the song came to life. So that the first second it kicks in on the guitar is just me. And I was just playing them two sort of notes as we're setting up. And then the other lads started jumping, and about half an hour later, the song was done. And I think often the best ones do happen that sort of quickly. But Pamela, the reason it's called that is, I don't know if you remember a show back, it was a while, it was called The League of Gentlemen.
Mm-hmm.
It was like a sort of sketch show, comedy sketch show. And I knew a bit of it, but Martin was a massive fan of it.
My precious.
This is it. Yeah, that's it.
Royston Vasey, you'll never leave. That's the key thing. You'll never leave.
This is it, mate. So it won't sound as mad now, you know what I'm talking about, right? So the reason it's called Pamela is we're playing this song in this rehearsal session for the first time and just putting it all together. And for reasons unbeknown to myself now, Marty, the bass player, who is a character in himself, decided to just bark down the mic one of the lines from the show. And it could have been risky,
Craig. I mean, there are certain lines in that show where you just think, where are we going to go here?
Fortunately, this
okie dokie, pig in a pokey. That's one classic.
Yeah, this is it. So I'll be a bit careful on that. But the one he came out with is there's a girl on the show and a character called Pamela Duve. And she's like this fledgling actress who's absolutely awful and sort of walks into this. What they call like this rehearsal thing. It's an interview she's got for a commercial, and she walks in to do this commercial and she's absolutely horrific, and she always is in all these acting jobs she gets, and she just screams this thing in the middle of one of our rehearsals, and Martin kind of just for some reason barks this out on the microphone, and we all kind of stop and say, what was that you just shouted at us all in the middle of the song? What are you doing? And
he probably said something a little more profound than that, but it is a broadcast interview, so I can appreciate, you know.
Yeah, I'll not tell you what. Yeah, we'll not go into too much, but if you just get the guys listening, go on to YouTube and just search Pamela Duve, League of Gentlemen, they'll see the sketch and look for orange juice, basically, right? And you'll see the sketch. So, yeah, fantastic. It's an homage to Pamela for some ridiculous reason. That's where it ended up going. But yeah,
what a great story, though.
Yeah, well, if you look at the artwork of the single. The artwork, we got one of Marty's mates to do it, draw it. He's an artist himself, like a freelance artist. So the girl on the artwork is a drawing of sort of the top of Pamela Duve's head, and she's getting orange.
Oh, is it? I've seen it, and that's really clever. Actually, I like the story behind that.
That's it. Getting like orange juice poured on her head because it's an orange juice commercial that goes into in this clip. So
there is some
method of the madness in there somewhere, mate. You know what I mean? Mm.
Yeah.
Who would have thought that Shearsmith and company would have actually inspired a four-piece band from the Northeast? Now, you say, Craig, that you're four-piece all hailing from different corners of the Northeast. Now, obviously, I'm down in Middlesbrough, which, as you know, is the capital of the Northeast. Forget Sunderland and Newcastle. You know, ultimately, all roads are into Middlesbrough. Only
I'll take your word for it, mate.
Right. So which are the four corners of the Northeast that you actually come from, then?
So I'm from Cramlington, which is a little town in Northumberland.
Got it.
As is the drummer Dean, who lives just literally the street next to mine. And then we've got guitarist Dan, who's up in Ashington, just 15 minutes up the road. He's from York originally.
I met him, seeking spiritual enlightenment there, travelling north, clearly.
Knew there was a calling for him. Someone needed a guitarist, so he thought, I need to get myself the Northeast. So yeah, he's an Ashington, and then Marty, the bass player, is in Whitley Bay at the minute. So yeah, I've dotted about a bit.
Whitley Bay, where the Spanish city was there. Of course, beautiful. Rebecca, being in Norwich, you might not have ever encountered the joys of Whitley Bay, but never mind, sorry.
No, I don't think I have.
I always feel I have to break into a sort of slight northeastern accent whenever you say the words.
It was a pretty good effort, mate, to be fair, pretty good effort.
Well, you know, one tries, Craig, one tries. So have you ever been to Lincoln and Norwich yet? I mean, obviously, Rebecca asked the question about gigs. These are places that clearly need to have their experience of the Jet Reds.
I haven't been to Lincoln or Norwich to play, nor when I toured with my first band many years ago, we kind of got around most of the UK. But Norwich or Lincoln, I haven't. But if there's venues, you know, are going to be wanting to get bands back on stage and that, then please pass them on, because we want to get about time when we can, definitely.
I would certainly say that the engine shed would probably look good on the CV from that point of view at the University of Lincoln. And Rebecca, I'm sure you'd be the go-to person for possible venues in Norwich.
Yeah, definitely. The university has a venue here that would also probably welcome you. They'd love to have you there.
Right, definitely. Well, get a word in for us, man, for sure. We'll be there.
Yeah, we'll do. Have to.
So, Craig, how can people actually follow you via the usual socials, etc.? What's the best place to go? Because clearly you can go to the Jets Reds website, but then you actually hear about the joys and the excitements of 2020. And clearly we just need to be... Well, it's 2021, so the jetreds.co.uk might not be the most up-to-date way of getting in touch with you.
Probably not right now, but if head to the normal places, Facebook, Instagram, Spotify, and YouTube at the minute. We're in the process of getting an old Twitter account back up and running again. But for the time being, Facebook, Instagram, Spotify for the tunes. Obviously, Pamela's up on there now, and YouTube for some vids. But again, all of the videos a little bit old, so there'll be hopefully some new live clips and that later in the year.
Classic, you see. No, they're not old, Craig. They are classic archive material. You know, that's
rustic, mate. Yeah,
right, exactly. Yeah. You know, that's the key thing. And remember, they are precious things. Keeping the thing going. Not to be confused, of course, with Alan Moore's The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, which is a completely different format entirely, as indeed was the movie. So often sort of sometimes confused. It's been awesome sharing some thoughts with yourself today, Craig. We're going to have the full version, the unexpurgated version of Pamela, following us in a few seconds. We had a short clip at the start of this little piece. But there are two final critical questions, and I'll ask Rebecca to ask the first of those. Rebecca, over to you, please.
Yes, Craig, have you had an enjoyable Zoom with us this evening?
It's been spot on, and thanks for getting us back after the disaster I had last week. So No, seriously, thanks very much. And the feedback you give, I listened to the clip from last week regarding the feedback you give on the track. Oh. And thanks for that as well. I appreciate it.
No, no problem. It's great to welcome you on the show.
I mean, Katie Grimerson, obviously, she's still in therapy. I mean, she's just so devastated. I mean, she's gutted, you know, from Birmingham. We'll get her back on the system. But, you know, she thought, wow, you know, band you like Oasis like I do. They sound so great. It's gone from that point of view. But the next critical question, of course, Craig, is will you come back? Will you return?
100%. Yeah, definitely, man. We're going to have we're looking at another single in about April time. So back end of April, I think the second track will be out, so I'll get in touch then and we'll have a bit of crack then, I'm sure.
And I've just got to also add, as a call centre persona, because we've already talked about your day job and so on, are you ever tempted to actually sort of, with whoever you speak to, I don't know which industry you're actually working within as a call centre, say, have you considered actually listening to the Jet Reds? And I just say, the heck with it, I'm just going to say, listen to the Jet Reds, they're awesome.
Alex, it goes beyond temptation, mate. I would have said the vast majority of the customers I get on the phone at one point or another will hear about the Jet Reds. I make sure of it.
Oh, there you go. Exactly. And obviously, we've changed the names to protect the innocent on that particular one. So it could be anything.
Thank you.
It could be in any sort of, you know, call center system. Lord knows I've had my experience of them, but still, we carry it regardless. Craig Redpath from the Jet Reds, huge thanks. Would you like to introduce your band with Pamela?
Yeah, sure. So this is our new single, Pamela. Get into it.
DEA, the man from AMDEA. which of course stands for the Association of Manufacturers of Domestic Appliances. And indeed, our man, the chief executive of Amdia, is none other than Paul Hyde. How are you, Paul?
Good morning, Alex. Yes, very well, thank you. Very well indeed.
Excellent. Now, the reason you're actually with us today is to talk basically about a new set of energy labels that are being launched to signpost the most energy efficient large domestic appliances. And as Amdia is the UK Association of Appliance Manufacturers, you're clearly in a key role to do this. So talk us through this and also some of the findings that suggest that actually we're still not necessarily being the most savvy when it comes to getting energy efficient domestic appliances in our homes.
Yes, so I mean, the reason we're talking about this today and talking to you today, Alex, is because there's a new energy labelling system and scale being launched as of the 1st of March. It's not completely revolutionary because those of you that have shopped recently for a new appliance will have seen the sort of rainbow coloured, multicoloured labels that are either stuck on the appliance if you go into a store or you'll see on online pages, which show the energy performance, the energy efficiency of that appliance. But those labels are changing. And the main reason is that in the last 10 years, appliances have become much more efficient. As an example, a fridge freezer that you buy today probably uses 40% less energy than one you might have bought a decade ago. And therefore, if you look at labels today, pretty much every appliance you look at across different brands and ranges is clustered at the top of the scale in the A scale. And we have all these pluses now, A++++++, because their energy efficiency has improved so much that the scale has now become not really particularly relevant, because there's nothing sort of B to G and everything in A. So what's been decided to allow us to make a little bit easier choice between the most energy efficient appliances is just to reset that labeling. So basically, if you have a product that's in the A yesterday, it could well be an E or an F today. Now, obviously, it's not less energy efficient, but it just means we can reset the scales. So it makes it easier for us all to make a meaningful comparison. But to your question, I mean, we've done some research. Unsurprisingly, you know, the price of appliances, you know, the budget that you have is very much front of mind when buying new ones. So I think that's hardly surprising, because we all have to work for a budget. But energy efficiency, it's growing in terms of people's interest, but it's still not the primary consideration. So we're hoping with these new energy labelling changes, being able to talk about it, that we get people to think not just about the overall price of the appliance, which of course is very important, but also about the relative energy efficiency, to encourage people to buy the most energy efficient products. And of course, you will then get a saving in the amount of water or electricity you're using through purchasing a more energy efficient appliance.
It's interesting that over a third of those surveyed believe that when choosing products, environmental impact did matter more to them now than it did a year ago, which I suppose not only shows the increasing importance of the environmental agenda, but also the fact that people are looking to secure the best value, both for their own pockets and also for the planet.
Yes, and I guess that's not surprising that the environmental agenda is moving up all of our, you know, all of our sort of priority lists. And obviously the government have stated an ambition to get the UK to a net zero emissions by 2050. And there's lots of different things that can play a role of that. And the amount of energy that we use in our homes is going to be a key part of that. I mean, I think, you know, there's a sizable chunk of your home energy is used through the many appliances that you have. So getting people to think about that is not only contributing to the greater good, but I think just importantly to us all, your energy bills are going to be lower if you buy a more energy efficient appliance. I mean, we did some research a while back and we found an example where a fridge of nearly 20 years old was costing £100 more a year to run in electricity bills than a modern appliance. So actually, you know, the other thing is trying to get people to think not just about the actual purchase price of the appliance, which of course is important, but also about the running costs over life, because you can save, you know, a not inconsiderable amount of money if you buy the most energy efficient appliance.
More than 9 million cooling and washing appliances over 10 years old, and an estimated 83 million fridges and washing machines in use in the United Kingdom. The one thing that strikes me, Paul, as well as obviously the energy appropriateness and indeed energy efficiency side of things, is are we looking to set in places any ways for recycling of old fridges? Because I'd hate to have that number of over 10-year-old fridges suddenly dumped somewhere without so much as a by your leave.
Yeah, and I think this is very important. And I think it's often, you know, cited by some as a reason to hang on for their appliance maybe longer than they otherwise would, is the environmental concerns. What I would say is that the industry now goes to a lot of effort and a lot of investment to ensure that appliances at end of life are responsibly collected and recycled. I mean, we know that for every three appliances sold, you know, two are collected and recycled. We think around about 85% of the materials in recycled appliances can now be reused. And there's very much a circular economy environment within the UK to ensure that once an appliance has reached the end of its useful life, it is professionally and robustly recovered and recycled, and therefore waste is not going to landfill. Those materials can be reused to make different products after its end of life. So we'd agree that's really important. But I think people can be confident now and comfortable now that their old appliances will be dealt with safely and professionally.
In betwixt times, of course, the government, who have lots of things to obviously occupy their minds and so on. But as far as Amdia is actually concerned, you're calling on the government to provide incentives to stimulate the contribution of high efficiency fridges to how they can actually be made to Britain's ambitions for a low carbon future. I mean, you mentioned this earlier, Paul. Do you think it needs legislation, or do you think it's a case of, well, nudge theory will actually work and we'll be able to get people to act in their own best interests?
Well, we think that there's certainly ways of incentivising consumers. And to be fair, the government has done that in other areas. You know, we see incentives on buying energy efficient vehicles. We've seen incentives and grants to support people making their homes more energy efficient through things like insulation. So we think, you know, we know this sort of these incentives, grants or reductions in taxation relating to those products can help. We know that price, understandably, is very important when purchasing higher ticket items. So we do think that there is an opportunity for the government either to provide grants for best-in-class energy efficiency or look at taxation rate on efficiencies, because actually it's contributing to the overall move for the UK to net zero. So there is a benefit to UK PLC by the government incentivising that when appliances are replaced, and I think 12 million new appliances were purchased just in the UK last year, we get people to purchase the best-in-class energy efficiency within their available budget.
Absolutely. And where can people go to, Paul, to find out further details about what we've been chatting about today, and indeed the Association of Manufacturers of Domestic Appliances?
So we've got all the information on the new energy labels on our website. So that's Amdia, A-M-D-E-A. So if people search for amdia.org.uk and then go to the new energy labels section, there's a video there. There's all the information, explanation on what's changing in the labels and how to look for the best-in-class energy-efficient appliances.
And just out of interest, Paul, you're probably going to say, well, of course, it's just last week I purchased a new fridge. How old is your own fridge?
My fridge is about 2 years old and was replaced when the last one reached its end of life. So at the time, I think it was an A++. So in the new scale, it'll probably be an E or something, but the same energy efficiency, as I said.
We would expect no less. Paul Hyde from AMDEA, many thanks indeed. Take care and be well.
Thank you, Alex. Thank you very much.
Well, over the last year, there have clearly been a number of people who have decided, if I'm going to go into careers in any way, shape or form, I should go into healthcare, become a hero. And indeed, thousands have become inspired to look for roles within the NHS. And to talk us through some of the reasons and the good things about choosing this particular pathway, we're delighted to welcome Dominic Williams. How are you, Dominic?
Hi, Alex. I'm good. How are you doing?
Excellent. So, Dominic, talk us through your own particular pathway and how you actually ended up working within the NHS and what you do, of course, now.
Yeah, sure. So I guess, hello, everyone. First and foremost, I am a master's physiotherapy student at St. George's University in London. I have been doing that since last year. I started that in 2000. Well, yeah, I started that last year, and that's been really rewarding so far. I've been learning lots and lots, and it's definitely a profession where I feel, you know, I can, you know, be myself and also grow and learn and develop as a physiotherapist. A little bit about the story of how I got into it. So I originally wanted to do it for my A-levels, but actually I didn't get the results. So I then opted in for a different course called Rehabilitation Science at a uni called Keele University. And I did that. And a year later, I ended up doing my master's in physio. So I'm really happy to have the opportunity to study rehabilitation on a broad scale at the start, and then, you know, specify down into physio later on. So it's been a good experience so far. Also, in the meantime, between my undergrad degree and my master's, I started my role in the NHS as a part-time healthcare assistant as well.
Just combining Renaissance man techniques there, which is wonderful. Now, we are in the middle of National Careers Week, of course. Why would you recommend taking a career in the NHS as being really worthwhile? I mean, apart from the obvious, you're helping people, saving lives and all the rest of the bits and pieces. What are the other bonuses?
I guess one of the best things about the NHS is it's an endless pot of opportunity in terms of where your career can go. There's loads and loads of different roles to which, you know, your career that you may come in as, you know, a junior or whatever it may be, you know, there's a lot of opportunities for that to progress into different things. You know, you can switch up later on down the line with your career and still be within the NHS because it's such a large supportive umbrella. There's loads of opportunity to do things in different areas and just keep yourself, you know, stimulated, keep yourself motivated whilst also, you know, working for the National Health Service. There's a lot of benefits to come with it, definitely.
I think there are over 350 possible roles that you can actually engage in. I mean, you obviously mentioned you're into physiotherapy. I mean, presumably there are a whole range of other sort of aspects that you can specialise in as well, if you wish.
Yes, yeah, 100%. So, I mean, that's one of the great things about physiotherapy. You know, it's the breadth of the profession. There's so many different sections. I would say, you know, the top three are musculoskeletal, which is to do with all of the muscles. And when you see, you know, someone running onto a pitch when a footballer's hurt their hamstring, that's the sort of field that they'll be in. There's also cardiorespiratory, which is to do with the heart and the lungs. So that's for all of the people who may have had heart attacks and things like that. So physios also do special work with that. And then neurological as well. So things like strokes and Parkinson's disease and different, you know, types of neurological conditions, physios specialize in that area too. So there's lots and lots of different choice, you know, for you to be able to find something that suits you and to progress your career in.
Now, interesting, in terms of the statistics, I see, Dominic, that more than 10,000 mature students aged 35 or over have actually agreed to study nursing, or indeed applied to study nursing for the first time this year, which is a substantial rise, 39% up from that point of view. I mean, what advice would you give to somebody who's listening to this who might be either in the mature student category or in the sort of standard sort of category? What sort of thoughts would you actually share with them in terms of the best way forward?
I guess one of the best things I can say now as a mature student would probably be to just get have a look into getting some experience where you can. Also speaking to people who, if you know them, who are already in the healthcare field and kind of seeing their perception and perspective on things. Obviously, take a pinch of salt with everything that you hear because every person is different. Everyone's got a different story. But definitely make sure that you just get information about the role. There's loads of different places you can get information about it as well. Places like NHS Jobs or NHS Careers, fantastic websites that can give you insight into what the careers hold for you and what they can offer. You know, being a mature student as well, it can be a bit daunting going back into higher education or any form of education. So just speaking to maybe, you know, there's loads of forums and things like that where you can speak to people who are already doing it, or you can DM myself. I have an Instagram page, a wellbeing page called Beyond Rehab. You can have a little look at that and just DM me and see if you have any questions. But yeah, definitely speaking to people, I would say, and getting a good perspective of it, and also just making use of those websites, NHS Jobs and NHS Careers.
And all part of the We Are the NHS campaign, of course, which is fantastic. And also, Dominic, in terms of your experiences so far, I mean, obviously you're still a student, still working through the processes of that. Have you had any rewarding experiences where you thought, actually, today has been a good day?
I have many days where I say today's been a good day. I'll be totally honest with you. You know, I think even just from the idea that every single day that I go in, I'll be faced with something different. It keeps me on my toes, keeps me motivated and keeps things interesting for me. You know, that's definitely something that I take on a daily positive. And then on top of that, being in the environments that I find myself in, obviously being at university for my physio masters and being in the NHS part-time anyways, there's never a day where I don't learn something new. So learning something new every single day is definitely a positive for me. And if you're in an environment or if you're in a place where you want to continually develop, then definitely take a look into NHS Careers.
Fantastic. Well, I think you've shared some of that enthusiasm with us today. A reminder, Dominic, just briefly in terms of the website, where would you actually point people? That's the best website to go to find out further details.
I would say NHS Careers is definitely the best one to have a little look at. They have live questionnaires there, so you can fill those in and get a better idea as to, you know, what careers suits you best and what sort of roles there are available for you. So yeah, NHS Careers, I would definitely look into and recommend.
Dominic Williams, NHS physiotherapist extraordinaire, huge thanks. Keep on keeping on and be well.
You too. Take care.
Can't complain, mustn't grumble. It's one of those lines which often tends to be applied to British folk. And maybe it's true when we actually see the results of a recent survey, which suggests that partly because of the Protect the NHS message, many people are avoiding their local GP surgery, with 58% actually reporting a negative impact on their physical health. Now, to talk us through some of these very interesting aspects and maybe provide some sage advice as well, we're delighted to welcome the wonderful Dr. Chris Morris. How are you, Chris?
Hello, Alex. Thanks very much. I'm very well. Thank you. How are you?
I'm good. I mean, obviously, we work on that basis. That's very positive. So we work through the whole system. But there is that line which suggests, oh, you know, it's just a little so-and-so. We can't be bothered with this. And clearly, on the positive side, yeah, a lot of us are actually adhering to the government's message of obviously ensuring that we're staying home, hands, face, space, all the rest of the bits and pieces. Yeah. But actually, some of these things, such as standard links with the GP, we seem to be putting them to one side. So share with us some of the findings of this report.
Okay, Alex, thanks so much. So I'm an NHS GP, but I'm also the medical director for a company called Health Hero, which is soon to be Europe's largest provider of remote GP consultations. And at the start of February, with the survey, we spoke to 2,000 adults in the UK. And a third of those told us they'd actually avoided making an appointment with a GP during the pandemic for a variety of reasons, some of which were to not be a burden in the NHS, the message from the government to protect the NHS was getting through. There was understandable anxiety about going to GP surgery and catching coronavirus, and also about passing coronavirus on. So clearly the government message has got through and there were patients avoiding making a point to the GP. That's not to say GPs weren't consulting with people, and after the pandemic, consultation rates have been as high or higher than usual, but there was definitely a drop during the first wave back in March and April. However, I think the other really interesting thing that's come out of the survey is that of those patients, or those adults we spoke to, and nearly 60% had had a remote consultation with their GP, and 3/4 of those had found that satisfactory or very satisfactory. So people, I think, are adapting to a new way of consulting with GPs and all the other healthcare professionals who work in GPs. And I think also with hospital doctors, you know, my patients that are being seen by consultants are actually not going to the hospital. They're having telephone calls as well. And I think the pandemic is leading to a revolution, really, in the way we consult with our patients and our patients consult with us. And I think it's got a lot of positive benefits. The colleagues in my GP surgery work, we think that we can help about 70% of patients without seeing them face-to-face through a telephone call or a video consultation or a text message or an email. And only 30% need to come in. This has got huge advantages. Imagine you're a carer or you're in work, you know, you're a policeman or a teacher and you want to speak to your doctor or your nurse. You can book a telephone call and they can phone you, and that's 10 minutes out of your day rather than a half day out of the day to travel to the surgery, sit in the waiting room, be coughed and sneezed over and catch flu, let alone coronavirus. You know, the GP's usually running late because the previous person took 20 minutes, not 10 minutes. And your day is really at the mercy of the person you got the appointment with. With a remote consultation, it's 10, 15 minutes out of your day. You know, on iPhone patients, and they say, you know, is it, can we talk now? No, I've got a break in 10 minutes. Can you give me a ring back? And you ring them back and it fits in with their working day or with their caring day or whatever it is they might be doing. So I think there are huge benefits from the revolution that we've undergone over the past year in the way that we're going to receive our healthcare. Of course, there are patients that we need to see. You know, you can't examine someone's abdomen or listen to their chest, or nurses can't do dressings without seeing them. But that's not most patients. Most patients often have got a very good idea of what they want and need from their doctor. And you can discuss that by telephone, because a lot of our history taking is done by talking and not by examining people. And a lot of patients are followed up by a chat. How are you? And you don't need to re-examine them. And with the technology now for prescriptions, they need all go directly to pharmacies. Technology don't have bits of paper with information on now. We send people website addresses. So the you know, necessity is the mother of invention, and how technology has changed for healthcare provision over the past year, it's astonishing.
you've addressed a couple of key issues there, Chris. I mean, one of which is obviously the notion of efficiency, and that's fantastic. And I think certainly in terms of the process, we can certainly address that. We're living the science fiction dream, you might say. What we're doing now is kind of interconnecting together. There are still glitches with the technology, of course. There are occasional moments, as indeed we're just sort of finding at this particular moment in time, where Zoom will freeze, we'll sort of absolutely interconnect on that sort of basis. There'll be sort of slight glitches on that. We're still kind of exploring this, I would have thought, because I mean, you also mentioned in terms of listening to stethoscopes, et cetera. I mean, it's conceivable technology already exists that we can actually have remote sort of ways in which patients can actually provide their own sensory data and so on. But is it a case of we take those steps slowly into a brave new world?
Yeah, I tried a system last year where a patient goes to a pharmacy, sits in front of a computer screen, and there was a stethoscope, a light for looking in their throat and their ears. They could take their blood pressure, and I could have a remote consultation with them, and I could examine them. You know, that I couldn't put my hand on their tummy, but I could listen to their chest and their heart and take their temperature and do a lot of things, a lot of the basic examinations I'd like to do. That still involved them going somewhere. The next step, and I'm aware that there is technology available where people can have something at home that they can plug into their smartphone and be examined. Now, at the moment, these things are quite expensive, and I think they're beyond the reach of most people. But I can see over the next 5 years, these things becoming more and more common, and trips to the doctor becoming less and less frequent and less necessary as people have to have the technology to hand to interact with us without even leaving the home or their office. And of course, the benefit for that our energy and our carbon footprint is huge from doing all this, as long as that we can produce the tools in a carbon efficient way. So life gets better, doesn't it, in lots of respects.
Well, the bottle has to be half full as opposed to half empty. Let's be positive on that side of things, which is very important. Yeah. Chris, where can people go to find out further details about Health Hero and indeed some of the things we've talked about today?
So if you go to the Health Hero website and you put in silent sufferers, you'll get access to the report. And I'd also encourage people to use the NHS website, which is a rich resource of information.
Well, as I say, hopefully there won't be a new symptom manifesting in the next few months of what I call Zoom face, where people actually freeze in a particular moment. And you just think, what are we going to do? Yeah. What's going to happen here? That sort of system. Yeah. Yeah. We got there in the end. Chris Morris, Dr. Chris Morris, huge thanks. Keep on keeping on and stay safe.
My pleasure. Thanks so much, Alex. And everyone keep safe.
Well, it's fair to say that one of the things that we've all experienced over the last 10 or 11 months, or indeed 12 months really, has been getting to a better understanding with our interiors. And indeed, we're talking about our home interiors, specifically relating to design, furnishing and functionality, with 41%. British folks saying that those three things, design, furnishings and functionality, have all felt more important since lockdown began. So to address this survey, we're delighted to welcome the award-winning interiors journalist and author extraordinaire. It's the wonderful Kate Watson-Smith. How are you, Kate?
I'm fine. Thank you for having me.
Good. Well, I mean, were you surprised by the findings in this survey? I mean, surely it's a case of we've always kind of known what our caves are like, and sometimes we like to sort of decorate our caves in the way that, you know, suits us.
Was I surprised? I was actually bizarrely reassured by this, because I think for many people, you know, starting a year ago was the first time they had to sort of interact with their interior design choices on a sort of cellular level, you know, so they might have slapped a bit of paint on the wall, bought a sofa because they could afford it or it seemed to generally fit, and gone to work, and then come back in the dark and, you know, sat there and watched TV for an hour and gone to bed. And actually, once we were all in lockdown and we were in our homes for, you know, 24/7, we had to really look at how our homes were functioning for us. And we have all got, I think, a greater understanding of what we need and what we like, crucially. I mean, one of the things that the HEAL survey found was that, you know, trends are becoming less important. I think only now 25% of us are focused on how our homes look, and the rest of us are thinking about how to make them work and what we need to relax. And I find that really reassuring, that, you know, we're really getting to grips with what we like and what we need. And I think many of us perhaps had a little sort of corner of a home office, which was great for a bit of Saturday morning admin. But when you've got to sit in that chair for 8 hours, 5 days a week, and actually do a job, you realise that setup isn't fit for purpose. So we've started to look at what we need. And I think that's been a good thing.
And certainly as more and more people have been working from home and, of course, delivering lectures and online materials and all sorts of other factors from that, we tend to obviously ensure that in terms of priority, having a decent broadband and then followed by our kind of surroundings all connects together. Is it a case of looking for answers from within? I mean, do we need to go within to actually find out what we really suit? I mean, in terms of obviously colour, which can clearly impact the psychological well-being of many folk.
Well, I think this is the great thing that people are realising is how much of a difference colour does make. And, you know, I think they say there's no such thing as the wrong colour. It's just the wrong shade. And I find, for example, and I think in common with 41% of people, that for me, sort of warm, neutral colours make me feel calm. They make me feel relaxed. They make me feel ready to start the day. Other people find that those colours are very draining and they just kind of can't quite get started, and they need brighter, zingier, more high contrast colours, which makes them feel energised and ready to work. So it's about us, excuse me, understanding from ourselves. So there is that sort of looking within, you know, yes, I like blue, but actually navy blue makes me feel relaxed and calm. Sky blue makes me feel a bit tense and edgy or, you know, not ready to work. So we do have to look at that to understand the impact that our surroundings are having on us and then decorate accordingly and not according to what we're told the trends are.
You make a very interesting point there, Kate, of course, because there is this tendency to actually say, oh, this year it's in to actually go the line of paisley. We should actually have bright red. We should go for this, etc. That can presumably be one of those challenges that people are faced with, where actually you shouldn't necessarily follow the trend and go for ultimately what suits your good self. Although having said that, presumably people living in families might have to have some sort of compromise as well.
Well, there's always a compromise in interiors, isn't there? And I think the way around that is, you know, you've got to have a conversation, and you've got to have a conversation with everybody who uses that room. So, you know, do bring your kids in and understand if there's a gut reaction. You know, we react to colour on a sort of psychological level, but also on a cultural level. So, you know, if you're Dutch, maybe orange for you is the national football team. If you're American, you might think chain gang. So there might be deep-seated reasons why someone in your house doesn't like a particular colour. I mean, usually we talk about, you know, I'm never wearing navy blue again because that was my school tie. So it's, you know, have a conversation and find out why that colour isn't working for someone, and then see if there's a different shade of it that might work, or if you're putting it with another colour where it might reinvent it and make it work. So it's all about conversations to see what people need.
More and more folk these days, Kate, are using technology to kind of get a heads up. I mean, obviously, we've heard a great deal about how Instagram has kind of taken off vis-a-vis home interiors and markets from that point of view. Is that also a place where people can obviously start getting their ideas and say, oh, actually, maybe orange is the new black, and maybe we should actually go for black and orange?
Oh, those are two sort of colours of danger. I think that might be quite stressful. Certainly for me, that's not going to work.
Indeed.
I am a huge fan of Instagram. I think it's it has to use a sort of slightly poncy word, democratized design. You know, years ago, the only way to see or get design inspiration was from magazines, and they were houses that we were very unlikely to go to and we weren't likely to see, and we couldn't really find out how they'd done it. You know, the joy of Instagram is you can see a room you like and you can ask that person, you know, by the way, what color paint did you use and where did you buy that cushion? And there's a really high chance that they'll reply to you. So that in a great way has given us inspiration and the knowledge to know what we like. But again, you have to be careful, because there are very much Instagram trends which spring up and which everybody's doing. And you need to just step back and go, am I liking that because it's been nicely styled and it's all tidy and it's been well photographed? Or is that actually a look I can achieve in my own house? And are those colours that I really like, or do I just like looking at that picture? So it comes with a slight health warning.
Our current Prime Minister a couple of days ago was quoted as saying that he believed that everything would be back to normal within literally months and so on. You might well sort of say this is just going to be a little blip in the whole sort of sequence. Do you think that these are long-term trends, that actually the kind of benefits for the environment and indeed perhaps our social and mental health and well-being from working from home will actually be fixed and start becoming part of our everyday lives?
I think there will be changes. I mean, you know, returning to normal, what is normal now? What is the new normal? I mean, I think there's certainly no question that lots of people, I think the majority of people, want to work in a more flexible way, sometimes from home, sometimes from the office. So they are going to have to start adapting their homes to make that work for them. So I think, you know, we need to start looking at proper office furniture, a really good office chair if you're sitting in it for 8 hours a day to, you know, give yourself back support. But I think also that understanding that our homes are really important for our mental health and our well-being. So we need to decorate to support that. We need to choose colours that, you know, make you happy, make your heart sing, inspire you. You know, I mean, if you are genuinely inspired by a magnolia wall and an oatmeal twist carpet, then that's great. But actually, if you yearn for a brighter colour or, you know, a patterned carpet, then now's the time to do it because it's your home and it's about what makes you feel happy and supported.
And are there any other immediate changes which you've detected in the ether, Kate, that you'd like to share with us in terms of actually, as we head through 2021, I think this is where we're going. Maybe it is magnolia walls.
Well, actually, there is. I mean, I think 41% of people are choosing calm, neutral colours. So, you know, magnolias, creams, that's not a bad colour. I've just painted half of my office in a sort of creamy colour with a strong burgundy. So I think it's warm colours. I think grey has dominated the colour palette for so long. It can be a cold colour. And I think now we're looking more towards warmer colours, warm neutrals, which make us feel a bit cosy.
Makes perfect sense. Kate, where would you suggest people should actually go to find out further details, either about the survey, the findings, or indeed some of your own fabulous suggestions?
They can go to heels.com on the blog, where there's much more detail about the survey, what people are doing, what they've found, and also, you know, lots of things to buy for their new home office. And my own blog, madaboutthehouse.com, I've written lots about tips from working from home. Always put your shoes on, don't work in your slippers, and other ways to decorate and make your home support you.
Kate Watson-Smith, award-winning interiors journalist and author, huge thanks. Keep on keeping on, and we'll speak soon.
Thanks very much.